Hey, this is D Knight.
This is Tony.
Yeah, I forgot. There's no Carol. And you're listening to the Farming Interaction Podcast. Okay. So, yeah, what happened there is it's just me and Ty today. And, you know, Carol is usually in the middle as she prefers it. You can read into that however you want. But we're just talking about, like, the order in which we introduce ourselves for the podcast. So that's the explanation for the confusion there. Obviously, today's been fucking insane. If you've been keeping up with the news, we don't even have the time to cover the entirety of it because it's been so completely out of control. But before we get to that, let's give a shout out to our sponsor, Sheets and Giggles. My man, Colin McIntosh, is the CEO with the most incredible sheets on planet Earth. Also, you know, with the focus on sustainability and protecting our environment. So if you want to sleep great, sleep comfortable, and feel like you're doing your part to make sure our planet doesn't implode in a ball of flames and destruction, pick up a set of sheets from Sheets and Giggles. Now, of course, after you listen to this podcast, you might actually be like, you know what? I'm rooting for the planet to explode.
That's true.
So it was a crazy day. I think, how did it start off, Ty? Was it, we got the announcement that Mitch McConnell's retiring. That was step one in the insanity. If you listen to this podcast, obviously we're no Mitch McConnell's fans. And as we're about to get to, he's largely responsible for the state of affairs and politics, or at least the fact that it's a total dumpster fire in a number of ways, including with the Supreme Court, and as well as like the proliferation of Trumpism throughout the Republican Party, not being any kind of bulwark to protect his party from this nonsense. Massive failure on his part. Anyway, and I think what was item number two?
Or success if you're Mitch McConnell.
So yeah, right. Right. Well, item number two on today's agenda, so Trump attempted to post a bond in New York in his $454 million civil fraud trial, but he only proposed the idea of posting $100 million bond. So he's like $350 million short, right? So
he's got sneakers. So $100 million and some. That's it.
That's it. Okay. So in order to appeal the ruling, the verdict in the civil fraud trial, Trump was either going to have to come up with the entirety of the judgment plus some interest, or he was going to have to secure a bond from a bonding company for the amount of the judgment plus interest. And Trump's idea was like, hey, I can't come up with all of it. Will you take $100 million? And the court was like, nah. And I think like the most important takeaway from that, obviously, is the fact that he's like, I ain't got the money. And not only do I not have the money, I will have to like sell some shit to come up with the rest of it when you take these pennies. Clearly, like you said, Ty, he ain't selling enough of them them Chuck traders.
The Chuck traders. But, you know, I thought that Mar-a-Lago was worth it. Well, I would think that he could get like a second or 14th mortgage on it. Or something, and put that up. You know, it is worth $1 billion. So I guess Putin is not coming, because there was like a lot of talk that, okay, Russia is going to, or, you know, Saudi Arabia, what have you, is going to come to his rescue. But yeah,
and bail him out. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think he's realizing that the currency of his complexion is only going to get him so far. And which is not.
What do you mean? Much. That he's orange?
So yes.
We don't really have time to talk about all of this, but like the thing about like hoping that some of the, I guess his foreign sugar daddies, like the Saudis and whatnot, the idea that they were going to come to his rescue. I mean, yeah, maybe. The thing is, there's a time limit on on their ability to do this, right? So after these civil judgments in the E. Jean Carroll trial and here in the fraud trial, like, I think it's 30 days after the judgment before they can start collecting. And that's just not a lot of time. Like, some serious moves would have to have been made ahead of time to pull that off. And, you know, obviously Trump's not ideal when it comes to the possibility that, hey, I don't know, motherfucker, you might need to plan ahead for some of this. The idea that they were going to come to the rescue, it was a flawed idea. There was not enough time on the clock for them to do that. And part of Trump's problem, too, with the civil judgments is that Engoron ruled that, like, well, it's a couple of things that make this difficult. The major hurdle being that Trump can't really engage in business with any financial institutions that are licensed in New York, which is like all of them.
Which is all of them.
Or at least all of the American ones anyway. Yeah, right. So, I mean, he might have to find some kind of fucking credit union somewhere or something. And then two is that, like, well, not only did Judge Engoron leave the financial monitor in place, he also installed like a compliance director. So you've got like two layers of, I guess, stewardship over the Trump organization to make sure they can't engage in those shenanigans. And like, I'm sure Trump will probably try to find a way to do some crime and commit some more fraud in order to come up with the money, but he can't, because someone's sitting there looking right over his shoulder, making sure he don't do no more criminal shit. So,
but they already tried that when they tried to move to Florida.
Oh, man.
Like six of the.
So we haven't talked about that on the podcast yet. But like, well, the first thing Trump did, the reason why there's even a financial monitor overseeing the Trump org in the first place is because he tried to pull that shit when the Tish James hit him with the civil fraud suit. Where he like tried to create a Trump organization too, and then just move all of his assets from Trump War to Trump War Two, and be like, "Ha ha, bitch, I'm out. I got you." And that didn't work. So, and the judge was like, "Bro, you calm the fuck down. All right, we're gonna put somebody, we're gonna install somebody in the organization to make sure you don't try and pull anything crazy." And then, like you said, so I think after the ruling that came down, Trump try to do this thing where he moved the addresses of his New York assets to Florida addresses, I guess, to try and escape the New York jurisdiction. It ain't like, bro, like what are you doing? Hell no. That was insane. But yeah,
what are you doing, man? But you know what? Now that I think about it, though, I think that he did have a contingency plan, however flawed, when he proposed that Lara Trump had the RNC and take over Ronna Romney McDaniel's place. I think he was thinking that that would be something that, and then he could just basically pilfer their coffers to pay for this. I honestly, like, when I think about it more, and like, you know what? I think that was what he was thinking. So if you think about it, like when it happened and then the timing of him announcing her, of all people, for that, and then her saying, "We're going to put all of our money into, defending the Trump," and they're like, "Fuck you are," like.
Well, here's the problem. Like, yeah, go ahead. You can put Laura Trump in charge of the financial aspect of the RNC. The RNC is broke. They've got like $16-17 million or something. It's some crazy low number. Like, it's February. It's practically March at this point. The election is in November. It's 8 months away, and they got less than $20 million. What kind of fucking election? Well, first of all, what kind of election are you planning to run with $20 million when you have to fund all your candidates? And then two,
they spent like $300 million fucking backing Herschel Walker.
Whatever is left, if you're trying to send that to Trump and the Trump campaign so he can run the presidential election, like it's a cockamamie plan, right? It's one of those, you remember those Acme cartoons back in the day, and you would watch like Wile E. Coyote and Roadrunner, and Wile E. Coyote would order all that stuff from Acme, and it'd be like this convoluted shit, and you would build it, and then it would just kill Wile E. Coyote instead of catching the Roadrunner. This is like the Trump level version of that. Yeah. Anyway, so, and then that was like, I guess that was the second third major development of the day. No, I can't even keep track. Ty, what the fuck? This day was so bananas. All right, so we're going to get to the meat of the meat of it here. In case you somehow missed it, which I'm assuming that everyone who's listening to this probably follows me on Twitter. And if you don't, you can follow both of us on Twitter. Links are in the show notes. Also, you know, subscribe to the Substacks, the various Substacks of our co-hosts, Tara and Ty. Also, purchase their books. And while I'm at it, I guess if you like want to support the podcast financially, there's a link in the show notes for you to do that as well. Although what I would prefer you do more than anything is just share this podcast with somebody else. But that's enough for the, make sure you hit the subscribe button and hit the like button. Do that cheesy shit. And if you feel like giving us 5 stars and you want to rate us, go ahead and give us 5 stars. If you give us 4 stars, you're probably an insurrectionist. Anyway, so the meat of today's developments, if you somehow missed it, is the Supreme Court finally, after weeks of waiting, decided to basically grant certiorari. I don't even remember. I don't know if I even said that right. Lawyers, just give me
certiorari,
a pass.
I think that's it.
Certiorari, something. I don't know. Anyway, grant cert to hear Trump's appeal of the D.C. Circuit Court's ruling on his claim of presidential immunity. I just haven't spent a lot of time talking about this on the podcast, and I will tell you why real quick. It's because I assume that once the D.C. Court of Appeals made their ruling, and if you happen to read it, it's pretty fucking airtight. I mean, they destroy the idea. So the fact that it took so long for the Supreme Court to come to the conclusion that they were going to grant Trump's appeal was surprising, because I assumed that the delay was that everyone was pretty much in agreement, or at least 5 or 6 or 7 of the judges were in agreement that they weren't going to grant cert, and they were just going to issue a ruling upholding the D.C. Court of Appeals opinion. Right. And maybe you'd have a couple of dissenting justices like Thomas and Alito who want to take their pot shots. And because, you know, like, even though Thomas don't say nothing typically in oral arguments, he can't shut the fuck up when it comes to those.
Yeah, right.
Right. So he was like, all right. Well, so they're probably just writing out their dissent, and everybody else is probably on the same page. Well, as it turns out, what they were doing was engaging in a massive delay of Trump's January 6th trial in D.C. And the long story short of it, the fact that they've taken up his appeal and they won't be hearing oral arguments until, was it April 22nd? I can't remember off the top of my head.
Yeah, it's like a month or two.
Yeah, I don't have any notes in front of me exactly. I'm doing this off the top of my head, so bear with me. So April 22nd, oral arguments, right? And then they likely won't issue an opinion. They'll make their decision, and they likely won't issue an opinion until at the end of June, most likely, right? Which means we probably won't have any idea of whether or not the trial is moving forward in D.C. until late June, early July. And that's if things go fairly well, right? So there could always be some kind of hang up. If enough justices on the Supreme Court can find a way to delay the decision even further, if they so choose, there's a number of ways they can go about that. We don't have time to just, again, say that for another podcast. And I say that all the time. We'll say that for another episode of the podcast, and then some insane news breaks, and we're like, all right, well, that shit's gone. We'll never talk about it again. It was like,
that was the whole point. I think, like, after the appeals court made their decision, they knew what they were fucked. Like, there was really no argument they had against it. So it was just do what they could to delay. Like that was their workaround. Like that was their end around.
Yeah.
It was just to delay.
We'll get to that in just a second. So Say we get the ruling in July. Judge Chuckin has already said that the time that she was going to allot for Trump and his defense counsel to continue to prepare for the trial. She basically hit the pause button on that. And the second the stay is lifted, when the Supreme Court hands down their decision, that clock will start ticking again, which is currently sitting at around 88 days. Now, give or take a week or two, maybe things could be sped up. So if you, even best case scenario, you say we get the decision in July, early July, first day of July, you tack on 2 months to that. That's early August, 1 month, and then early September, the second month. And then you've got to do a couple of things here, like jury selection, which could take weeks. And that's, you know, you haven't even started the trial. It's already the end of September. The election's in November. Early voting has already started. There are already going to be votes cast. So, like, and that's best case scenario. Like, there's a number of ways things could potentially spiral out of fucking control and delay this thing and delay the beginning of the trial until after the election. And even if the trial starts before the election, Chuckin's already basically said it's going to take 3 months. So there's almost no way.
I mean, this is a federal trial. It's a federal trial. So it's going to take time.
I mean, you say that. Well, I mean, for this case, 3 months is not really that long.
That's true.
So obviously, if we can relay this information to you on this podcast, you can't tell me that the justices on the Supreme Court don't understand what the fuck is going on, first of all. So they're clearly aware of the calendar. They're aware of the stakes. So that they made this decision, and it was a choice, right? So there are a number of instances where the Supreme Court has decided to take up a case and grant cert in a matter of days. In this case, they took, almost 2 weeks now?
Yeah.
Right. So that's an extra 2 weeks added to the clock. They set oral arguments for a month and a half from now, you know, the near end of April, middle of April. They could have set oral arguments for later this month.
Yeah. They know what the fuck they're doing. They know what they're doing. And it is a running out of the clock.
Yeah.
They're just they're buying time for Trump and themselves, because, like I said, they knew that they had no real legitimate, logical or rational argument against the appeals court. Like, they were so fucking boom, boom, boom. Like, they took out. And when I was doing my pre-law shit, one thing I learned was like how to point out the fallacy in a person's argument. So you attack what you know that they're going to try to respond with before they do. So when you're done with your arguments, when they get up, they have nowhere to go. And that was what that ruling did. And the Supreme Court scrotus, that's what I'm going to call them. They knew.
Oh, yes. They know. They can look at the decision from the DC Appeals Court and know that they didn't leave them any wiggle room.
None. Zero. Zero. Like, just going through it, I'm like, just trying to, you know, I look for holes and like, okay, maybe it's like, no, they, like you said, it's air fucking tight. Yeah. And right now, like you said, fucking Thomas, this motherfucker is so tight-lipped. He just sits there. I mean, he's just basically been taking up space, a seat warmer on the bench for all of these decades. And this motherfucker can't shut the fuck up right now.
Nah.
Like, he can't shut the fuck up right now. You know. This shit is just so fucking wild to me.
He got nothing but words right now. So clearly they know what they're doing. They've decided up front here that they're going to do their best to make sure Trump doesn't go on trial, at least for any of these serious criminal charges. until after the election. We don't have to get into Florida. Like, we basically stopped talking about the development, the day-to-day developments in that case, because it was obvious from the get-go that Judge Cannon was going to delay that thing until after the election. And I think that's fairly clear here. I mean, Trump's lawyers even filed an immunity claim in that thing. So I imagine now that the Supreme Court's taking up this DC immunity argument, Trump's going to be like, hey, look, Judge Cannon, the Supreme Court's probably going to rule in my favor. We should just delay this Florida trial. And she's going to be like, all right, cool. Yeah.
So exactly.
It's a wrap so on that one.
I'm not buying her little, like, couple of rulings lately, like, oh, she ruled against Trump. Not really. Because it's like when it's like, okay, if you have 300 Democrats and 135 Republicans and a bill comes through and you vote no, but you know it's going to pass, you're doing it, but you're not really doing it because you know that your vote doesn't matter. But then you can go back and say, I voted against this. So like, it's that type of move.
Yeah, long story short, what she's doing is she's trying to not to make any appealable rulings that could get her removed from the trial.
Exactly.
So, and then your last hope really is the Georgia RICO trial, which I can just tell you from the state of affairs in Georgia, that thing's not going to take place before Election Day, just on the simple fact there's way too many fucking defendants. Like, unless they narrow that thing, like, unless they, a lot of people plead guilty between now and the beginning of summer, they narrow it down to 4, 5, 6 defendants. That thing's not taking place anytime soon. And that's if Fani Willis doesn't get removed from the case, which, you know, again, this is another development. Like, we haven't had time to talk about any of this shit. So, you know, they interviewed another witness in Michael Roman's motion to have Willis's office disqualified. I listened to a large chunk of it. I really didn't hear anything potentially damning, or at least to the degree that it would support the idea that Willis's office should be disqualified. I mean, it's just, long story short, this was a shit show and they threw a lot of spaghetti at the wall and none of it really stuck. And it's probably just going to be up to the judge's discretion to decide whether or not he believes Fani Willis and Wade's testimony. And I don't think, and because the burden is on Roman's counsel to prove that there was some disqualifying benefit that she received, I don't think they met their burden. Probably good to go in that department. It's just the thing is, the nature of a RICO prosecution, especially when it's complicated down in Georgia, it just takes a lot of time pre-trial to get this thing rolling. And so what you're left with is this New York trial, the Stormy Daniels hush money 2016 election interference case. It's going to take place in a month.